This program is brought to you by PrideNZ.com.
Well, we're coming up to a quilt panel, which is, we call the Eve quilt. And so this is the quilt that was made to commemorate Eve. The quilt we've got here at the moment is quite a good example of the types of, you know, in the way that it illustrates the types of problems that we're coming up against with these quilts, in terms of they're very much a product of their time, in terms of the materials that have been used and the techniques that have been employed. So for a lot of the quilts you'll come across, they might be quite conventional quilt in terms of, you know, fabric pieced together to form the construction and then embellished with surface stitching. But equally there are quilt squares which have been put together using adhesive, hot glue, sellotape, pins and staples. And also the materials used, you can see we've got a Barbie doll and some troll dolls and a lot of plastic, a lot of sequins, a lot of plastic components and foams which are inherently unstable and are quite a challenge for us from a conservation perspective, because there are limited treatment options. And once those degradation reactions start, they can actually be quite rapid. So I guess everything has a lifespan, and what we do in the museum is we're trying to extend the life of the object. But of course, with a lot of these very contemporary items, plastics and foams, it's quite fixed and we have very little treatment options available to us. So for some of these quilts, we've had quite a discussion about what we should do and how we should approach it. So I guess the key is really the photo documentation, because for some components they will degrade to a state that they will, you know, they're going to just be a hot, the foam expands and it discolours, and they also can present problems to the quilt in terms of they sort of release volatiles and might leave sticky residues and staining. So so you can see that I think what's happening here, the Objects Conservancy had a look at the troll dolls, but it looks like maybe some of the plasticizer is starting to leach from the plastic, and so they become a little bit sticky, and so then they start to really become a bit of a magnet for soiling and dust. And Barbie is, her plastic arms are very brittle and discoloured. And yeah, so it's quite typical of some of the problems that we have to deal with. And also, I mean, they, as I said before, they are a product of their time. And while you've got a square over there which has a lot of sort of, has been embellished with stitching, a lot of the quilt squares feature textile paint. And also, because I can remember, you know, the 80s and those fabric paints, but it was glitter paint and the three-dimensional puffer paint were really popular, and so they feature quite a lot in terms of the tributes and inscriptions that people have made. So at the time, rather than embroidering, people used those textile paints and also just felt pen and biro. And some of the pens and some of the inks that have been used for the inscriptions have been very light sensitive, so they've actually faded to the extent that it's you can't actually make out those tributes anymore. So I guess the key for us is to have a really good is to document them with photographs. And when they come in, I will do a base condition report and record the current condition that they're in. It's good for me that we have a mixed lab and I can consult with other conservators. So when I need to, I'll be able to consult with the paintings conservators about the paints that have been used, and also some of the, you know, the problems that we are presenting with the plastics and foams. But for some of it, it will just be a case of, you know, documenting. And we think we might, at this stage, what we are really just doing is documenting the condition, and just and focusing on the storage. And so what we're doing for these is Andrew and I are surface cleaning front and back of the quilts, and what we use is just low-powered vacuum suction, and that's just to remove loose particulate soiling because they've actually been outside and directly on the ground. So we're just doing that, and then Anne Williams, our volunteer, is making the calico cover. So we're kind of constrained by space and resources and thinking about how the quilts are going to be used. So I guess you could look at a quilt piece like this and think, well, the ideal storage space would be to have it completely flat and not folded. But in terms of handling and providing access, and we have to make a compromise, and we, you know, it has to be able to fit on the shelving unit. So we are going to fold them, and we will pad around some of the elements. But some of these elements, like the troll dolls, because the plasticizer is starting to leach, we have to kind of provide a barrier between the fabric and the troll doll. And we also might investigate using some charcoal cloth as well. That's just might help in sort of absorbing some of the volatile emissions that they release. So hopefully we can just, it'll be about trying to slow down those degradation reactions and just preventing any damage to the quilt that these present. But there might come a time, and it's really hard to put a time frame on it, where we are faced with that decision where we have to actually remove a component from the quilt, which will be very heartfelt and a really difficult thing to do. But we have discussed it before they were accepted into the collection, and it's a problem that, you know, with contemporary collecting across the collections, not just with these quilts, but with contemporary sculpture and contemporary art and our textile collections as well. Yeah.
How long does it take you to surface clean a block?
Well, I can show you what we've got that we use, is that for a lot of the surface cleaning that we do, we use adapted dental aspirators. And you can imagine that for a quilt of this size, it would take a really long time. So we've actually had to be quite realistic about what we can do. We've got a museum vat, which has got a bigger head, but it's got a variable suction, and it will take us a couple of hours per quilt. This quilt's going to take longer because we have to spend a little bit of time documenting some of the degradation reactions that are starting to occur, and also that we need to kind of work out, just to go through each square, and we need to think about incorporating something with a charcoal cloth, and we have to isolate some of these areas with some mylar or Tyvek just to prevent direct contact between the troll and the support it's on. But at this stage we're not doing any major interventive or remedial conservation. It's just really about stabilising it for storage, and then if it was to go, for some of these quilts, if they were to be viewed as they were intended to be, which I think they were just laid out flat on the ground, they'll be fine. But if someone said, well, actually we want to put them on the wall, then as a conservator we'll have to come along and reassess that, because the has to be structurally intact and stable enough to support the weight of the quilt, and then all you would have to consider all these areas, you see some areas where there's some failed stitching, and areas where there might be some stitched support work, or some remedial conservation may be required. But that would be dependent on, I guess, what the requirements are. But at this stage, it's more about, we just want to surface clean them to remove that loose particulate soiling, document the condition that they're in and the materials that they're made of, so that just will just to be aware of any long-term problems we might have, and to have them stored in a way that, you know, it's not going to cause damage, and that they'll be, you know, they can actually, when they bring them out and their nice calico covers, are actually quite easy to handle. And usually with the quilts we roll, because we don't like folding things, because we don't like creases, because it's that idea that that's where it will fracture along a fold line. but we can't with these because we can't roll the quilts if they've got these three-dimensional elements. They don't want to roll. I mean, we might snap Barbie. We're just folding, along the joins. So we're trying to avoid any fold lines across the panels. And so that you'll see that our storage cover actually conforms to the size of one of these panels.
You've got a fold where originally they've been folded here. Do you have some sort of process that you allow that to ease out?
Well, sometimes it will ease out just sitting flat, and sometimes we do, we can kind of relax the creases and we with sort of a little bit of control, I was going to say moisture, but it's not wet moisture and weights and things, but you do need to be careful of dye bleed and all that sort of thing as well, so we're not going to do that at this stage. And because they've each section's been made by different people, there are a lot of different tensions happening within the quilt, so a lot of these creases and things can't be completely eased. You sometimes just have to accept that's how it is and that's how it wants to be. And of course there might be areas where it will fracture at some point, but these things, everything has a life, and what we try and do is extend that life, I guess.
When you were saying about writing degradation reports on various parts of the quilt, what kind of things are you looking for?
I guess this is a good example here, is that you can see that this troll doll with the plastic, that I think what's happening is that the plasticizer is leaching from the plastic, and so it becomes a little bit sticky, and you can see how it just sort of all the dust and sorting products. We might have another look at that, but because it might not actually just be sorting products, it might actually be part of a degradation reaction that's happened. It's just come out this morning, so we haven't had a really good look. But also Barbie, I mean, you know that Barbies can, the type of plastics that they're made from, and having been quite a fan of Barbie growing up, you can just see that there's been some colour change in the plastic of her arms. They're getting a little bit cloudy and white in areas, and if I, I will give it a little prod, and it will have sort of quite a brittle feel, I suspect, about that. And so we just need to move our way through each section of the quilt and just sort of identify these problems as well. But we also look at things like, what the tributes and the inscriptions have been made of. I mean, this is quite typical. There's quite a bit of glue residue, because that's what they've chosen to apply their stars with. And here we are. There it is. There's the glitter paint. And you can see that for some of it, it's interesting, for some of the that three-dimensional puff paint, there has been quite a colour change. So it has faded and it cracks and it flakes as well. And
Does the photo transfer take a special technique just to conserve them, or?
No, I think that we're not going to do anything in particular. But also, I guess the other important factor is that a lot of the dyes and inks and like the felt pen tributes are very very sensitive to fading, so that for some panels the tributes are completely have faded to the extent that you can't actually make them out. So it will be important for us to monitor the any colour change and fading, and we will from now, although we don't know what the illumination history of was for this object. Now that it's in the museum, we do actually record our light levels, and we actually keep a record of the light exposure that it'll have while it's in the museum. It's always difficult when objects come in because you don't know, you know, how much light exposure that they have had, but we do know that we need to kind of be aware of about some of the inks and paints and I guess the transfers that have been used, because they will be prone to some fading. But it can vary quite a lot. It's quite interesting, really, that you know, you don't always know what people have used and what it's been applied to. I guess over a period of time you can see that, you know, adhesives yellow, darken and discolour, so they can actually become a little bit unsightly. This isn't too bad.
So your condition reports, are they quite extensive? I'm just thinking, like, with this one here, we've got all these little stars. Do you have to note, you know, how the stars are when they first come into the museum?
Well, what we will do, because there's that, you know, they're all large works, is probably that, you know, I'm not going to record every single loss that occurs on here, but I will say that there are some losses, and because it's been photographed, it will be clear in the photo, so that actually provides our photo documentation. It actually is an essential part of the written report. Because I think I also find that if you write a lot, which will be easy to do with these, it doesn't mean that people necessarily read it. And so you... yeah, and I guess other conservators on the whole will read it and will have seen this type of damage and this type of condition. So when you sort of mention it, everyone's kind of on the same plane and knows what you're talking about and the language that you use. So you don't have to... fortunately mention every single star, but if it was going out on loan, it would be photographed again, and I might, with I'd probably just take it, you know, often we will just take a photograph of it, and if there's areas that of concern, we will do like a mylar overlay and just sort of draw it on and highlight it. But that's a really good way of us sort of monitoring the ongoing condition of these items, is the photo documentation, because that's what we have. While we have records on our database, and all the images are on there as well, here in conservation we also have hard copy files as well. So whenever this comes out, it'll be assessed against that base report and those base you know, that those initial photographs that were done.
What's it like working on something like this?
I found that these have been very emotional, and it's I don't think there's any, you know, even though we see work on amazing things, and I just, you know, I'm just so lucky that with these pieces, I don't think any, nothing has had the effect, has affected me personally in such a way as these quilts. I think the first few times I had them out, I just couldn't stop crying, and I'm better now, but sometimes, you know how you have to distance yourself and step away from it a little bit, but I'll still come across something that will just kind of connect with you, and it just starts you off again. So, yeah. And so I know there's a couple of quilts that really get me going, so that I just have to accept that's what's going to happen when I'm working with them. I just have to have my tissues handy. And everyone's really supportive and understands, because everyone has a similar response to them, I think. So you can't divorce yourself from it. But yeah, there's just a lot of love and heartache, and you really feel it. And I think the panels that have really spoken to me are when, you know, the mothers have done things, and as a mum to a little one, you know, you see the pictures of the little boys and you think, oh my gosh, starts you off. There's just so much love on each panel that you just really feel it. You're going to make me start.
Yeah. Taking my breath away, you know, having read so much about the panels, but to see them in the flesh and real is breathtaking.
A group of us went to Auckland to assess the the quilts, and we're in a church hall, and I'd have to say by the end of the day, and I knew I was going to be a wreck, so I took all my boxes of tissues, but I went through them, because we're in a church hall, and they have really horrible toilet paper in the bathrooms, and so my nose was, by the end of the day, was I had this sort of reindeer red nose and poached egg eyes. It was just terrible. But at the end of it, we went and had a little bit of time in the cathedral, and it was just a really nice to kind of spend that time together in the cathedral and just kind of take a moment, because a whole day of, I found it, it was really tough, actually. Yeah.
Have you had any surprising discoveries?
I discovered a panel that was made as a tribute to someone that I knew, not particularly well, but it was really nice to see Arthur's panel. And I didn't know him well, but he was my aunt's hairdresser, and he'd been really good to me when I was young at a family wedding. We'd had a lot of fun, and there's some great photos of Arthur and I together. And he was... so it was actually really, it was nice to see Arthur's panel, and of course his was the most challenging panel from a conservation perspective, and I thought that would be just, that's just typical for Arthur's panel to feature a big crazy headdress made out of kind of degrading foam, huge. So I went, right, thanks Arthur.
So how does that work when you maybe have a panel and a block of eight that is degrading more than the others? How do you protect the other ones?
Well, I think what we're going to do with the troll dolls is we are kind of trying, we'll try and sort of incorporate a barrier between the troll dolls and their ground fabric that they're on. And we will also think that we might try and do something with some activated charcoal cloth on that panel. So we need to just sort of spend a little bit of time thinking about how we're going to actually do that. And I'll probably work in with the objects conservator, because she's sort of comes across this sort of problem on quite a regular basis. And so we'll just have to kind of have a think and work something out. So while this morning I thought I will be able to surface clean this in a couple of hours, that this particular panel is going to take a little bit more time. It's probably going to take just the rest of the day to really to work out, to surface clean it, to document it, and to work out what we should do with those plastic dolls. I think that we might actually surface clean them, and so that everything's always photographed before, during, and after treatment. And so that, we'll be able to sort of monitor the degradation reactions, I guess. But I am aware that for some things it can be really, really rapid.
So how do you photograph something so large?
Well, we do have a photography department, and they have been able to photograph it, and you might like to talk to them about it. I think they've got a system whereby they can actually have it down flat in their studio, and then they can go up onto towards the ceiling and do it overall, or they may have done smaller sections and then just kind of pieced it together afterwards. So I'm not sure how they've actually done it this time. But for me, since those overall photos have been done, I will just probably just do some detail images of the areas that are of interest and concern to us.
And for you yourself, it's so large. How do you get to the centre to start?
Well, what we have to do is, because I really want to surface clean the front and the back, so we've got it on a large table and there'll be two of us, is that we just have to... we just kind of have to pad out a fold and just fold it over and then do that section and then work section by section. So sometimes with things that you can flat and large that you want to surface clean, you can sort of roll them onto a roll and work as you go and then roll a bit and then do that section. So it's best just sort of adapt that process really, but we can get around most sides of the table, and you can do as far as your arm can stretch really.
What about something like with Barbie's legs kind of sticking up? Do you actually, in storage, do you put her legs down? Do you move the object?
What we will do is that we will just have a look at Barbie and see how she's feeling, how she wants to rest. So if it makes sense for us to put her legs down so they are resting flat, we will do that. But if it's proved to be that's because the plasticizer is leached and it's become brittle and stiff, I'm not going to move Barbie's legs, and I'll just pack around her so that she's kind of supported, and we just have to accommodate her as she is. So there are some elements here that we just have to kind of cover and pack out. If we get the odd quilt, which is, you know, quite flat and has been pieced in a quite conventional manner, so it's just a stitched embellishment, we can cover interleaving with Tyvek, and then just folding them and they're going in the calico covers. But we've decided on the calico, the unbleached calico, rather than the Tyvek, because there's actually, I think it's going to stand up better. You know, the Tyvek's very slippery and difficult to handle with the size of them, and if they're taken onto the marae, you know, the covers, it all kind of goes together in quite a neat package. So if someone's not familiar with the handling requirements, and you know, the Tyvek after a couple of uses looks untidy. So those calico covers with their ties, there's no ties to get lost, everything's all together. It's quite straightforward in terms of that you just, it's like an envelope that you unfold, and then you can, so I think I hope they'll prove to be quite a useful thing in terms of storage and having to, if they need to be transported within the museum, if they were to go to another institution, would do something a bit different. But if they needed to be moved within the museum for people to look at, I think that should work well, and the size fits between doors, and you know, so all those handling requirements you need to think about. And if they get a bit grubby, they can go on the washing machine. Yeah, so that's good. But it's important for me that they're important. And I guess for lots of us, you know, we often show our love for things with when we do baking for people. And for conservators and volunteers here working with the textiles, for me, the way of showing love for something is to have it looking stored, and I think, you know, it's important for me that they have a good storage solution and that it looks good and it looks like people are caring for it, I think.
It's nice to see the love that's continued on, that it's not treated as an object. It's more than that. And the respect that is shown to the quilts is so important.
Yeah, I think that's the nature of the object is that, isn't it, really? But, this is Anne Williams, who is one of our great treasures here at Te Papa. She has worked as a volunteer at Textile Conservation for 33 years. And we are just so fortunate and lucky to have Anne. And Anne's been helping me with the AIDS quilt project by making all the covers, the calico covers, for the storage of the quilt. So Anne, do you want to just talk a little bit about what we've been doing with the quilt covers?
Yes, when we looked at the quilts, we realised that the design had to be something that could be worked by anyone that wanted to look at them. And so rather than make a bag, which was difficult to put the quilts in because they are quite large and heavy, we decided to make a sheet effect, folding the sides in and then folding the other two sides in so that the corners were all protected and covered. And then tied with ties so that they would hold together. Anybody that looks at them can put them back the same way as they found them, and they're protected because we have left the Tyvek underneath to protect them as well.
So it's been quite a job. We've had meters and meters of calico that's needed to be washed and ironed, and it's actually quite a demanding job making these covers.
The quilts themselves in their folded state have been measured so that the covers themselves fit each particular one. We have ensured that they're neatly done, so that I think it helps when people handle and look at these things that they will take particular care. They are not exactly fragile, but if they are mishandled, we're not going to have them for very long.
So I said it was a little bit of our way of showing love for these textiles that come into the collection, is that you always have them looking, or your storage boxes and supports are really beautifully made and really well executed.
Yes. These ones, these quilts in particular, are special because they're memory quilts, and they're memory quilts for a very special reason, and we can be thankful now that life for people who are suffering in this particular way is much easier, and the prognosis is much better than it was in these early days when there was much sadness and discrimination. Yes.
Had you come across the quilt before?
No, I hadn't. I had known these quilts existed, but I hadn't seen any of them at all. I knew that they have been done with people who are not necessary needle workers or even stitchers or sewers, but they're quite extraordinary. Yes.
What was your reaction when you first saw them?
This is the only one that I've seen opened, and my reaction is that for something that's so sad, they are extremely colourful and very pleasant to look at.
So do you delve much into the stories behind the panels? Do you do research into that?
At this stage, I'm not. I just don't have the time to do it. But our curatorial team will probably do more of that. You know, sometimes for a treatment, you do need to do, if you're going to do a remedial treatment or an interventive treatment, it's often at that point that you need to do a little bit more sort of in-depth research on your object. But at this stage, it's really is about just we're just focusing on having them working on the storage requirements and that base condition report, really.
And when you say remedial treatment, what does that involve?
That's if you wanted to intervene with the object in forms if it needed to have stitch support, so if there were some loose elements and we needed to secure them, so if there were some beading or a troll doll was about to fall off and we actually had to stitch it back on, or there's some failed stitching, or the support's got a tear and for it to be displayed that needs to be stabilised, then that's what I consider to be an interventive treatment. If we have to, and even if we have to remove if there was some unsightly staining or soiling.
Do you have anything like the AIDS quilt in Te Papa's collections in terms of what it was there for?
Off the top of my head, I can't think of anything. I think this, you know, the quilt is actually quite unique, and it really is a product of its time. And but I mean, we do have lots of things in the collection that do present terms are a conservation challenge in terms of the materials that they're using. So the problems that these quilts sort of illustrate is not unique to the quilts. It's, you know, across the collections, really. I think the history collection just acquired some Barbie dolls, so it's kind of a very real concern to the wider museum community as well. I mean, there's actually you know, there's conservation conferences dedicated to the subject of modern materials and what we're going to do with these degrading foams and plastics. It's actually quite interesting about within the conservation community, there's not always an agreement about what the best approach is to do, and that's actually really interesting. I was at one conference where, you know, all those fabulous designer chairs from the 50s, 60s and 70s with the moulded foam and plastics, they're presenting quite a problem in a lot of museums. And there are groups of people that say, you know, one solution would be, well, let's just remove the foam and replace it with a more stable archival foam. But as soon as you have done that, it's not the Eames chair that it was. And so some people actually believe, well, actually someone in the museum community with that chair has to leave it as it is. So we have, even if it is, the foam degrades and it goes a little bit like hokey pokey sometimes, and so it will swell and then all your seams and your upholstery split, so that it becomes quite distorted. It becomes a lot like sometimes like that hokey pokey when you leave it out on the kitchen bench, sort of sticky and oozy. And so what should you do? Well, the one thought is that you remove the foam, and one thought is it's actually important for us to have a record of that object as it is, with no intervention as such. And we can look at, there's things we can do about our environment to kind of slow down those degradation reactions. So if we can reduce light exposure and keep our temperature quite low and avoid extreme fluctuations in relative humidity and temperature, we might be able to slow them down. But I think that they do get to a point where, even with all those things, that the reactions is, you know, that reaction's very rapid. So we have had things in the collection. We had a couple of years ago a hat that was made out of plastic bags, and it came in, and within a year it had really started to degrade. It sort of looks like it had dandruff, and now it's probably just a pile of white plastic flakes. And it wasn't accepted into the collection, but it was really interesting to kind of watch that and see what happened. It was really rapid.
So given the best care in the world, how long do you think these will survive?
I think it's really difficult to put a time frame on, because, you know, but I guess it'll be, you know, be interesting to see, but I just wouldn't like to say, really. But the other thing is that with a lot of materials now, people are concerned about landfill. So, you know, artists that are using found objects or plastic bottles and plastic bags, you know, they often have additives added to them to design to accelerate that degradation reaction, because people are concerned about landfill. So I know that they've been putting things like starch additives into some of their plastics, just to kind of, because, you know, that sounds like it would be a good idea, but if you're an artist and you choose to use those materials, they will have a fixed lifespan.